Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Track, a podcast for runners. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This podcast is dedicated to and centred upon the committed club runner, the committed amateur. This week on Track, we will discuss some of the latest race results across the UK following the return of some competition across the country. We'll have a quick chat about the recent elite marathons that have taken place in Valencia and Arizona, both with some British interest. We'll cover the latest news, and we also have a very interesting interview with Chris Barnes, who is the race organiser for the Podium events, which, as we've said on multiple occasions, have put on some brilliant events this year, including Mark Scott's British 5K record. As always, I'm joined by Robbie Campbell, Kat Hutchinson and George Beardmore. So we hope you enjoy and thanks for listening. How's things, guys? Robbie, how are you getting on? Everything okay?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, congratulations, Ben, on the birth of your little boy.
Thanks, Robbie. Yeah, so Jack Duncan turned up last week, so we've got a new addition to the household, keeping us busy, which is why actually this podcast is a week delayed. So for all of you who were hanging on last week, that's my fault. I apologise. Well, it's Jack's fault, but he's not here to blame yet.
How many days off did you have, Ben?
Off running, I had maybe 2 or 3 days off. I've been managing to get out since then. So
okay. All good. 2 or 3 days off in a row?
No, just sort of sprinkled here and there.
Always time for a few miles, isn't it?
Yeah. How are you, Kat? You've had a bit of health up and down since we last spoke?
Yeah, I think I just managed to get back to some running again and started to feel good, and then had a bit of an episode of a bit of a funny turn on Monday night, ended up in A&E, so now I've got to back off the running again for another week or so. But yeah, the injury seems to be going well, so at least I feel like as soon as I can get back to it, that's pretty much gone. But yeah, just really frustrating.
And you think it's perhaps this long COVID that people are talking about, do we?
Yeah, I don't want it to be long COVID, so I'm just going to say at the moment I'm still less than a month from testing positive, so it's probably just that I pushed a bit too hard too soon, tried to get back to running too quickly, and so hopefully it's not long COVID, hopefully just another week or so's rest and just being a bit more sensible, I can get back to it.
Yeah, that long COVID as well, it's the minute you start thinking it is long COVID, it's probably quite difficult not to think it's long COVID, isn't it? So you could probably start putting so many different things down to the illness.
Yeah, not worrying too much about how you're feeling and things. I just think at the moment I'm still pretty close to when I was ill, so I'm not gonna say it's long COVID at the moment. I'm just gonna take another week and
just COVID.
Yes, just COVID at the moment.
George, how are you doing? Back in Worcester from university. How's everything going?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Yeah, term finished on Friday, but I was back for the last week of term to do online as well. Yeah, training well. Had a couple of easy weeks at the end of like the last training block and started the next training block last Saturday. So yeah, all good.
And we have a half marathon in the pipeline, I hear?
Hopefully, yeah. There's one in Loughborough on 28th of February. So hopefully that goes ahead, and that's kind of the target for the next 10 weeks, whatever I've got now.
Okay, and time targets, or is it just about going out and racing? Have you got something in the back of your mind?
I think it's pretty flat. It's on the airfield where they do the intercounties, so if it's windy, it's quite open. But it should be flat and pretty fast, so 68 minutes. I think sub 68 is probably a bit ambitious, but somewhere around there, hopefully.
Okay, now that would be your debut, would it?
Yeah, never raced half marathon before, so yeah, looking forward to it.
Two more questions then, George. So one, how has your training changed since sort of having this as a bit of a target? But also, are there sort of race plan wise, are you hoping to sort of get yourself in a pack and just tick off the miles and not worry too much about the clock? Or are you going to sort of look at the watch and think, I'm going to hit 68 splits here?
In terms of training, the main thing that's changed is the mileage will be pretty similar. I was doing 80 to 85 miles a week last semester, so that will stay pretty similar. The main change will be more like faster recoveries, floats. So rather than walking or jogging recoveries, like 6 minute miling recoveries, so not really recoveries. In terms of the race, I'll try and be cautious. I know that on a race day, I think like 68 minutes is about 5:15s, 5:12, something like that. So I know on race day for the first few miles that will feel pretty easy, but I don't want to get sucked into like get a faster group and then leave myself with no choice but to cling on to them, otherwise I'm on my own. So I'll try and be sensible for the first half of the race, and then if I'm feeling good, maybe try and pick it up a bit, but just see who's around me.
Have you got a couple of people from Loughborough that you've kind of eyed up to run with and will kind of go out for similar times?
Yeah, I'm hoping there'll be some fast people there. I know the university are giving away a few free places, one of which I've got. So hopefully there'll be a few people there. I think there might be some using it that train in Loughborough to maybe use as like a pre-marathon trials half marathon. So yeah, hopefully there'll be someone to cling on to.
And George, you obviously a lot of your coaching now is done by or in conjunction with Frank Baddick.
Yeah.
And Frank's obviously a very good athlete in his own right and is hopefully racing the marathon trials at Kew Gardens.
Yeah, so Frank's he's doing the marathon trials. He has his first marathon. So yeah, he's setting quite a few of my sessions and setting me similar sort of ideas as to he does. He does a lot of the float recovery sort of stuff. So yeah, it's good to have some of his advice as well.
Robbie, how's your running going? Are you getting out? And
yeah, it's been all right on the whole. Still niggling with that injury from kind of a few weeks ago, the old piriformis, which has kind of come back again, which is just really crap because I've got a week off work and, you know, a chance to kind of get out and put some miles in, and had to take a day off completely today and probably will take another day off tomorrow as well, just because it's so sore really. So so might be back in the shed on the turbo tomorrow possibly.
I heard some rumblings that there may be a marathon on the cards, Robbie, in the new year. Are you allowed to divulge that, or is it still being sorted out with the race organisers? And
yeah, probably better talking to my agent on that one actually, Ben, if that's all right. So I'll put the link below. But yeah, no, well, Newport, yeah, I think I'm all in for Newport. So I just want to clear this kind of injury up first, because the thought of kind of increasing mileage from kind of 60, 65 to kind of 90, 85, 90, which is what I'd want to do, I don't think it would cope with it at the moment. So I'm not quite sure what to do about it, to be honest. I need to either seek medical help or make some sensible decisions and changes. And but yeah, so that's the plan. I was looking at the potentially that Loughborough half as a bit of a benchmark at the end of Feb, and then Newport. Yeah, so Kat's still in for Newport.
I'm kind of, it's getting a little close now. I need to start doing some miles, but I think I probably will enter it anyway. I love marathon training, so I'll do the training, and if I don't quite get up to pace, then I don't really care if I get to run it or not. So yeah, I'll probably enter that. Definitely, if you're in it, I'll come just to watch you.
Just to abuse me.
Suffer, yeah.
I'll probably need to shift the old COVID first cap before you start marathon training. What's the doctor saying about that?
Yeah, they're saying no running for a little bit. But I think jogging like in a week or so, I don't know. I feel quite ready to go because I've had so long off running. I feel like I can go up to 60 mile week straight off, but I'm guessing my body will probably say no. But I'll put in some sort of marathon training block because it's good to be marathon training anyway.
Robbie, target time for marathon? Anything in the back of the mind?
Let me think. it's got to be 2:45 realistically, I'd say. I mean, I could just kind of say under 3 hours, but I think realistically, I wouldn't want to go and just do it under 3 hours.
Oh, nice. Oh, I like that. That's bold.
Is that bold? I didn't think that was that bold, really.
It's pretty hard. That's quite hard. But I think you don't want to just, you know, you want to put a proper effort into it. You've been running a lot. you know, it's not like you've not been running for years,
no.
You've not gone up to that distance. So
to be fair, I'll probably will start working with John Danahay again on it, and that's kind of on the basis of a discussion with him. So he was kind of, his idea was 2:45.
Yeah, I think definitely try and get under 2:50 would be a good target.
I think I'd rather fall apart trying to go for 2:45.
Yeah,
and run 3:15 than just kind of run for three and still might fall apart. I don't know. To be honest,
go for it.
I literally haven't got a clue.
Sounds
but
good.
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, if you're going for 2:45, Kat, we'll definitely be turning up and watching.
I will definitely watch those last 6 miles.
Yeah, I'm going to be at around mile 22, Robbie.
Well, good luck with that, mate. I don't think you'll be seeing much at mile 22. Might be a wasted trip for you there, mate. Are you still doing Wrexham, Ben?
Yes, that's the plan. That's sort of the big thing in the calendar. 25th of April. So yeah, all eyes on that really. A few weeks, I think, just with the little one here and see what I can do. And then hopefully come New Year, it will sort of ramp up to something a little bit more normal again with everything on the line at Wrexham.
Nice. And your target time, 2:30?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, 2:29:59 or quicker.
Yeah,
that's the one. And yeah, same with you really, Robbie. Now I'm at the stage where I'd rather blow up going for that than run a 2:45 or whatever. So yeah.
This is going to be a good marathon season. Yeah. I'm going for it.
Eventful, probably.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or not, we'll wait and see. Cool. All right, guys, you said in the intro, and obviously Robbie and George, you guys spoke to Chris Barnes for the interview this week, and that will obviously play at the end of our little chat here. If we move towards the race results, Chris Barnes obviously involved with the first one we're going to talk about, and which is the Podium Cross Country, which took place in Lancashire. So that happened on the 12th of December. Robbie and George, you happy to talk through the results here and a little bit about what Chris said about this event?
The kind of most elite cross-country race that we see in the cross-country season, really, within England at least. So when he spoke to me and George, Chris kind of gave a little bit of a background on what he was trying to do in the course. And although there was no footage of the course, which was a deliberate decision by Chris, so we didn't want any kind of cameras there picking up on anything that potentially would kind of draw criticism or whatever, not that there was anything to draw criticism on. He was going for kind of a European style cross-country feel, which is kind of more laps, essentially around a reasonably flat kind of school fields, is what he was saying, wasn't it, George? But as the times kind of show, it churned up massively and became quite a bit of a slog fest, I think, or in Chris's words, a proper race. So the female race was, there was 18 starters in the elite female race, which is a 6K course. And really excitingly, 1, 2, 3 were all under 23 years old. So Amelia Quirk came out on top with a really mature kind of professional performance. Second was Eleanor Bolton and third was Bronwyn Owen. There were some big names in the field as well. So Lily Partridge, Jip Vastenberg and Claire Duck were kind of much further down the field. I saw something from Lily Partridge on Instagram, I think it was, where she just, I don't think there were any excuses. She just said it was a tough day at the office and kind of got outrun, really. So then on the men's, Ross Millington came out on top. So he's a bit of a cross-country kind of specialist. So, and he just pipped Emil Kerres from Leeds. Callum Johnson came in third, and then Ben Connor came in fourth. So the reports are that it was a kind of race to the finish, really, from the top four. And there was also a non-elite race as well, which was a 6K open men's race, which was won by Flynn Jennings of Bidford AC in 23:55, which was actually a really, really quick time. So Flynn's obviously a really good runner. So that's a couple of minutes faster than the leading ladies, I think. So that's, like I said, that's potentially the first and last cross-country kind of elite race for a while.
Well, as you say, he sort of pulled it off and managed to get an elite cross-country where no one else has, really.
So. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. He'll, I mean, obviously you'll hear it in the interview, but I mean, he kind of seems to have a real passion. I don't know what you thought, George, for this kind of cross-country European approach. I can't actually remember if he was saying it when we were recording or whether it was kind of after when we were chatting to him. And he was seems to have like a real passion for kind of bringing this kind of multiple lap, kind of heavy atmosphere kind of cross-country race into the UK. So I know he's looking at putting something together, potentially quite an exciting proposition in the spring. Or at the end of the kind of cross country season for an Internations cross country, with the guy that runs the cross challenge races, which will kind of have a bit of a European feel to it. So that might be his kind of next kind of venture, really. So exciting stuff.
He was talking about, is it Igabar, the cross country in Spain, isn't it? That
That's it,
he wanted
yeah.
to model his, it's that's an international cross country. He wanted to model his on that, like a, sounded a bit like Night of the 10K PB sort of thing, be a, like big crowds, small course, so you can see all the runners all the way around. So yeah, it sounded exciting.
Yeah, he wanted to like bring a bit of kind of like he was talking about music, wasn't he? And a bit like nice as 10,000 PBs and in the European cross country, so just giving it a bit more of a kind of intense feel to it, I think. So that's could be quite good.
Good. Well, listen out for that in the interview, as we said. Speaking of races in Spain, a couple of weeks ago now, on the 6th of December, but a race we were all interested in and watched was the Valencia weekend of events or day of events. We had the half marathon and the marathon. If I just quickly run through sort of the major results here, and I suppose the biggest story of that weekend was in the half marathon, there was a new world record for the men's race with Kibiwot Kandy from Kenya running 57 minutes and 32 seconds. The first four athletes across the line actually ran under 58 minutes. So it was a really, really quick set of results there at the top end of the field. In terms of the female race, that was won by Genezebe Dibaba from Ethiopia in 65:18. Who is the world record holder for the 1500 indoors and outdoors? And that was her half marathon debut. So 65 minutes as a debut isn't too bad. And we also saw in other news in the women's event, Emily Sisson was 1 second off the American half marathon record. Quick times and sort of the main story was how quick that men's half marathon was. So many athletes going under 58 minutes. We'll come back to that in a second. I'll just run through the marathon results. The men's race was won by Evans Chebet from Kenya in 2:03 dead, and the women's was won by Peres Cheptegei from Kenya, who we've mentioned a lot of times on the podcast, normally in the half marathon, as this was her marathon debut. She ran that in 2:17:16. In terms of the British interest or the UK interest at the race, we had athletes Matt Clowes, Norman Shreve, Paul Martelletti, and Pete Le Grais all starting in the men's race. Matt Clowes went off and seemingly, and looking at his splits for the first part of the race, was going for the Olympic qualifying standard of 2:11, but I think had a tough sort of last 4, 5, 6 miles and came in at 2:15:46. Norman Shreve of Cambridge ran 2:17, which was a 20-minute PB from 2017, which is pretty amazing. Paul Martelletti, sort of as consistent as always, ran a 2:19:56. And Pete Le Grais DNF'd relatively early on, or at least was struggling early on, and according to his Instagrams, having sort of breathing difficulties and chest issues. So disappointment for Pete Le Grais. I'm not actually sure how many of those, well, I suppose Norman Shreve will be happy with his PB, but from the other guys, I'm not sure how delighted they would be. So I suppose things to discuss, guys, is obviously the how quick the half marathon was. Again, lots of shoe talk, and with the Adidas shoes now in the spotlight instead of the Nikes, and yeah, I suppose just the normal conversation around the new world records and why they occurred and all the rest of it. So, George, what was your take on the race?
I'm probably one of those that's always skeptical right away. I think the 30-second world record isn't maybe as significant as I first thought, because I think Geoffrey Cammerall's 58:01 was entirely solo. So maybe 30 seconds isn't as silly as it sounds, but I think four people breaking it is quite alarming. I don't think the shoes are really that important, because as long as they all have them, and now obviously Adidas athletes and Nike athletes are on a level playing field, I don't see a problem with it. I think it was a problem when Nike athletes had an advantage. That was unfair, but I don't think it's the shoes. I think, I'm not saying they're all on drugs, but there's been very few tests this year. It's been in the media. So I think this probably just highlights how the sport's going sometimes.
It's so difficult, isn't it? Exactly like George said, that if you watch that, obviously the half marathon, it's just so difficult not to kind of put two and two together and kind of come to the worst case kind of consequences in your own mind about it. I think there's quite a lot of attention on this Alexander Mutiso, isn't there? Is he the guy that finished fourth? I mean, I've heard it a couple of times on other podcasts and whatnot, that he's kind of the fly in the ointment, because the others, you kind of look at and think, well, it's not beyond the realms of possibility, and they're all kind of pushing each other on, etc. But then this Mutiso has kind of come in and really shone a bit of a light onto it, in terms of his time being completely unrealistic in terms of kind of what he's run before and where he was at earlier in the year. What's your opinion on it, Ben and Kat?
Yeah, I like to believe it's just things moving forwards and the shoes improving people's times. I do think you get an advantage from the shoes, but like George has said, it's now at least a fair advantage, but it's not fair against the previous world records. And I think we are going to see records broken because people will run faster in those shoes. I think they need to, they make it look too easy, don't they? They need to make it look a bit harder, and then we'll believe that they were working that hard the way Candy ran it. And hearing him talk afterwards, he said, yeah, I thought I'd give him a little test, and then I thought, when I came back to him, I thought in a minute I'll put in another thing. And it's almost like you shouldn't be able to just plan it like that and just think, right, and now I'm going to go. It should be harder than that.
He was trying to lose him, wasn't he, by weaving across the road, and yeah, to do that at world record pace. Well, obviously,
yeah, world record off the racing line.
Yeah, it's What was your stat, George, that you had about the amount of drug tests this year?
So this was the New York Times. This across all sports, and so not just athletics, but athletics was a big part of it. 110,000 drug tests have been carried out this year up until the end of November, so that's only 11 months across all sports, and it was 230,000 last year. So on track to be pretty much half the amount of drugs tests. I couldn't find it. I tried to find it before this because I said to Ben about it the other day, a kind of a graph on Twitter of number of drugs tests versus world record times ran or PBs ran, and it was quite a noticeable trend in lower drugs tests means more PBs.
2021 is going to be interesting, isn't it? Because if we get back to some kind of normality in terms of the testing, if times kind of from the same runners get slower, noticeably slower and consistently slower, then it's going to raise even more eyebrows, isn't it? So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, very interesting. I think a couple of other points away from the results. Funny again to see a sort of big city marathon with no or very little crowd noise. I thought that was quite a noticeable watching the coverage, and yeah, just a bit spooky sort of running through the empty streets there. But good to see Valencia put that on, and I suppose Valencia almost cementing their place as the quick marathon now, I would say, challenging Berlin and London in terms of times and where athletes are going to want to go if they want to run a quick time. I think sort of the last 5 years, Valencia has just come to the fore, and I think it's going to just continue to get bigger and more popular.
Did you all see just a bit of it? I think you're right, Ben. I don't think any of the British, I don't think Matt Klaus, Martelletti, and obviously Peter Greist would be happy with their performances. But obviously Norman Shreve was obviously hugely excited at what he ran. Did you all see him kind of come over the finishing line? So he got into a, He outkicked the female winner,
I go for Chepchichir, but who knows?
I don't think I've ever said that before. You've always been the one to say it. So yeah, he got his moment in the sun by kind of outkicking her. Thought he was going to burst her tape at one point, but he got kind of ushered to one side. So
I don't know much about Norman Shreve, but a 20-minute PB, so that must have been, what, 2:37 down to 2:17. I wonder if that's, wonder what's changed. It would be interesting to get him on the podcast, maybe, see what the story is. Okay, so let's move on. Good stuff at Valencia. Let me whiz through some of these other race results. Some interesting and fast times at the track meet, which happened on the 4th and 5th of December. I just sort of pick out the British interest again. We had Sam Atkin, who finished fourth to complete one of the most impressive performances of the meet. On the Saturday night, he ran a 27-minute, 26-second 10,000 metres, which was an improvement of almost 3 minutes for him. And that was one day after running a 13:18 first heat of the 5,000 metres. So a pretty good weekend for Sam Atkin there. In that same meet, another Brit, Jack Mayer, came 12th in the 5,000 metre B race in 13:44. He's an under 23 studying at Wisconsin Uni, and British runner who runs with Tinman, Jermaine Coleman, ran a 13:57 5,000 metres.
Yeah, well, I think he's a year older than me, Jack Mayer. 13:44 is pretty good going. So I think that's only, 30 seconds off Olympic sort of standards. So good future ahead of him, definitely.
I'm just going to whiz through some of these UK-based. So the last couple of weeks, we've seen the return of racing to the UK. Sort of the usual suspects have put on races such as Run Through, etc. So we had the Running Grand Prix at Goodwood Festival on the 6th of December, and they had races throughout the distances. There was a bit of a mess up and a high profile mess up in the 5K, sort of brought to prominence a bit more by YouTuber Ben Parks, who covered it on his YouTube channel, about 400 meters short for the 5K distance. So I'm sure a few people were peeved about that. Special mention from me to Adam Hill of the Team Marathon Road running group, who debuted in the marathon event and actually ran a 2:36 to finish fifth, which is a great performance from Adam. Ewan Cameron won the race in 2:19. Jason Porter came second in 2:26, and James Hurrell came third in 2:34. In the female race, Steph McCall won it in 2:45, Samantha Amend in 2:53, and Felicity Pay in 3:04. So other races we've had in the last couple of weeks have Run Through Tatton Park 10K. We've had the Remembrance Run Hertfordshire 10K, the Fast Friday 10K in Exeter, the Milton Keynes Winter Half Marathon, as well as the Rapid Malloroy 10K, the Essex Remembrance 10K. So really good to see that first weekend back, so many races take place and loads of sort of fast times happening. I don't know if you guys saw any of the social media posts about the Milton Keynes half marathon. It was won by Jordan Clay in 68:40 and Alicia Lacey for the women's in 80:48. But lots of chat on social media about it being consistently short when it comes to the GPS. So there's a bit of that on Twitter.
Is that the same guys that did the virtual Milton Keynes marathon?
Oh, I don't know. Let's not get into that, shall we? That got cat fired up. We had to edit all the swearing out when we did that.
Do you know on the Rapid Mallory 10K, do you know Luke Duffy, George? He's one of yours, isn't he, at Loughborough?
Yeah, in fact, the top 5th and 7th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. 13th, they're all Loughborough, so pretty much a Loughborough race, I think.
So that was won by Luke Duffy in 30:14, the 10K, and for females, Jess Judd won that in 32:30. If I have a look at some of the other results there, in terms of the Remembrance Run Hertfordshire 10K, that was won by Ryan Burling of Marshall MK in 29:49, so a really quick time there. So just great to see some races back on across the country. Robbie, we were going to have a quick look at the Derby Runner Cross Country League at Prestwold Hall and the news there. You okay to talk us through that?
Yeah, I don't really know much about the Derby Runner Cross Country League. It seems like it's something that's been going on for a few years, but I thought it was just worth a mention just to kind of give them a shout out because they're kind of pushing on, I suppose, in the same kind of vein as Chris Barnes with the podium. Race organisation and trying to kind of put a cross-country series on, which is quite interesting. So this was at Prestwold Hall, which is where, well, George mentioned it earlier, where the Intercounties is usually held. All of the races, obviously, COVID kind of secure. So they've got the first, they've got this first race on last weekend. And I think they're going to try and put on some more in the new year. So I'm just kind of going by their, what they've kind of put in place for a COVID secure cross country event. So toilets available, each of which will be cleaned and sanitised every 45 minutes or less. Loads of sanitising points, full medical cover, staggered arrival times, kind of loads of socially distanced enough room, and they've basically found a way to kind of make it work, really. So complete kudos to them for doing it, and raises a question why they're able to do it and maybe more people aren't. I mean, it's something else that we touched on with Chris Barnes when we talked to him. You know, it just goes to show that if you've got somewhere like Prestwold Hall where you can put it on and you've got the space and you're prepared to kind of make a day of it, then potentially it is possible to kind of get it on, really.
The Marathon Project USA, which took place this weekend, sort of organised largely by Ben Rosario, who is the coach at the Northern Arizona Elite Group. This was a specially organised marathon project event in Chandler, USA, or Chandler, USA. Sarah Hall won the women's event in 2:20:32, which was less than a minute off the American record. In terms of the UK interest, the men's side of things had a runner, Matthew Leach, and he was making his marathon debut. Bedfordshire and Hearts runner, also Peninsula Distance Project runner. He ran 2:17:38 to finish 38th. So it's very good for a debut. And he went through the half in 1:07:46. And interestingly, Matthew Leach ran the Houston half earlier this year, where he set a big PB of 62:57, suggests that he may be sort of going to go faster over the marathon distance in the future. And also interestingly about Matthew Leach, he set on that same race, himself and his father set a world record for the fastest combined marathon, father-son. So they both ran a half marathon, and Matt ran 1:02:56 and his dad ran 1:11:10. So they had a time of 2:14 for the fastest father-son half marathon combined, which is pretty cool. Kat, you wanted to talk about how this sort of may sort of tie in with what we're going to see in the British marathon trial in Kew, and your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting. Sarah Hall, obviously, we all saw her perform really well at London with that great finish to come second. She had already run the trials, the American Olympic trials in February, and didn't finish at that race, so wasn't selected for the US. Interesting, we're looking at doing a similar kind of marathon trial event, which I don't know the ins and outs, but I'm guessing we're not going to pick it just on, or we are going to pick it on that, but only because of getting the standards, I think. Whereas the American team do it, basically, that's it. You run the top three, go through whatever. And so looking at who finished in that race, the American trial, the person that won it, their PB is 2:28, ran that day because it was their debut. So it was a difficult course. They can probably do slightly better than that. But it's, the next person is like Molly Seidel, who ran 2:25 at London. Any sensible selectors can see that Sarah Hall would do a better job at the Olympics, but because of the way they select it, you are automatically selected by running it. And I just really don't want to see us go the same way.
Yeah, just going back to the Sarah Hall point as well, is that they ran their trials in February, didn't they? Because obviously it was for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. And then they picked the same athletes, which is fair enough because they'd qualified, it would be unfair, but they've then done the trials 18 months before the Olympics, which you wouldn't choose to do. So whether they could change it for this year and pick the best athletes, I don't know, maybe that'd be a bit unfair, but yeah, it does seem an interesting one.
Yeah, it's kind of highlighted it this year more because it didn't go ahead, and Sarah Hall then's had a great season since. But she was already the favourite And so one bad race and you don't represent your country in the Olympics, despite the fact you're the best runner.
So if we move over to some of the news that we've seen the last few weeks, let's start with the news about Jake Smith. And I'm sure you guys saw this. Jake Smith has switched his allegiance or his representation from Wales to England. So 6 weeks after breaking the Welsh half marathon record, Smith, who's 22, has been running for Wales. He's based in Cardiff, where he studied at Cardiff Met. He broke Steve Jones's 34-year Welsh record at October's World Half Marathon Champs. And he said, "This is a hard decision for me to make, but I feel it's the right decision. I thought at first it was only natural for me to turn Welsh as I live here and have done for the past 3 years, but I feel as though I hadn't thought it through properly. The big turning point for me was when I broke Steve Jones's record, who's a Welsh legend of distance running." He says, he goes on to say, "As both my parents were born in England and I don't have any family ties in Wales, I'd feel much better representing England at future competitions. However, I'd like to thank Welsh Athletics for everything they have done for me, as their support to date has been incredible." So in a nutshell, Jake Smith will now be representing England at any future races rather than Wales.
I think you'd probably be pretty pissed off if you're maybe from Welsh Athletics, but I think, I'm sure I read somewhere that they've kind of given him a pat on the back and wished him all the best. I mean, he's obviously not born in Wales, is he? So he's not kind of, I think he's just made a logical decision based on kind of where he was actually based. And it actually does seem like he's more English anyway. So, yeah. You know, in terms of both his parents are English. So good luck to him.
Does he keep his Welsh record? Does anyone know? I've not seen about it anywhere.
Good question. That is a good question. Yeah, I bet Steve Jones hopes he doesn't.
George, what got you fired up this week was the fact of the cross-country, or the lack of cross-country, that's going to take place at Paris Olympics in 2024. And instead of cross-country, we're going to see some other forms of sport.
Yeah, so this is news from the IOC that breakdancing, skateboarding, sport climbing and surfing will all be on Olympics. And then there was a statement from World Athletics that said, "Cross country is an exciting and fast growing sport around the world, so we're clearly disappointed it will not feature at the Paris 2024 Olympic Games." So I think it's a bit of a weird, you see, I mean, I sort of get why they haven't put cross country in the Olympics, because obviously there is already quite a lot of running events in the Olympics. So whether the quality would have been that good anyway, because people would have chosen to do the track or the marathon, maybe that does make sense. But I think break dancing is an interesting choice. I think they're trying to reach out to a younger audience, but don't really think that is what young people do. It just seems a very out of touch decision. And considering how many people compete in cross country around the world, I mean, there's 3,000 people turn up at the senior men English national cross country. I doubt a few thousand people turn up at the national breakdancing competition, if there is one. It just seems a bit of a weird decision not to include cross country, but also other sports that aren't in the Olympics already, whereas running obviously is, like squash, and I think they've cut weightlifting and boxing, or like the number of participants for weightlifting and boxing, in order to make room for breakdancing and these other sports, whereas kind of marathon running or cross country and the boxing and stuff like that, they're original Olympic sports that have been in there from the start. So it seems weird to cut them for sports targeted at younger people that younger people don't really seem to do, as far as I'm aware.
The world of squash has kind of come out quite hard on it, haven't they? Because when you think about it, how can breakdancing be more recognised as more of a sport than squash? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the reason I am bothered about it is because cross country is the sport that's not got in. But maybe that does make sense because there's already so many running events. But yeah, if squash has been in the Olympics before. In fact, wasn't it until London 2012 or something, and then got kicked out. But yeah,
I don't know.
To have breakdancing in doesn't really make sense to me, because I think it's just someone in the IOC trying to reach out to younger people, and I don't really think that's I don't think they've got that right.
George, you're going to have some breakdancing posses all kind of outside your house, I think. waiting for you, following you down the street after this kind of tirade against a wonderful sport.
The great thing about this podcast is I don't think we attract many breakdancers. You can say what you like.
I might share it on a few breakdancing platforms.
My kids are really into the next step at the moment, which is a dancing program with breakdancers in. So it may be for the very young.
Is that a film? Is it on Netflix?
It's a series, like it's a TV series or something. And they're well into it.
I keep hearing that from my daughter. It's like a constant kind of request, but I never quite know what she's talking about, so I just brush it off. Yeah. Every now and again, I just hear the next step, and I just kind of walk away, really. So I don't know what you're talking about, but now I understand. So
it's pretty bad. I watch it with them, which makes it really bad.
What's the breakdancing like in it?
I don't know how you decide who's best. Like,
well, that's the other thing that annoys me about it is subjective sports in the Olympics.
Yeah.
There's no obvious winner, annoy me. I mean, I know other sports are like diving and synchronized swimming, so maybe it's fair enough. But yeah, it just seems, I don't know how you pick who wins. I don't know.
It's
not a funded sport, so how is anyone going to send a team? It just seems all very bizarre.
Yeah,
George, that's a firm no, is it, for you, for breakdancing?
I can't say I'll be watching it next year.
Good. Okay, let's move on. Unfortunately, we had some news that probably wasn't surprising, but we saw that the England National Cross Country Champs and Intercounties Cross Countries have been cancelled this year, again, due to obvious reasons, COVID restrictions, etc. And we also heard of the sad passing of fell running legend Pete Bland as well. So our thoughts with his family there. Closer to home, we had some news. Kat, if you want to talk us through the Worcester AC annual awards and the winners and movers in that.
Yeah, so we've got a few winners amongst us from the awards were announced at the AGM earlier this month. And George, for I'm guessing at least the second year in a row, has won the cross country, the male cross country award.
Well done, George.
That's based on just who scores the least points over the four races. I was lucky enough to get the females cross country award this year, and Robbie has got a very special one, the best supporting male, which when I got the best supporting female and asked Andrew Peach what that was for, he said it's the one for turning up. So we're really proud of Robbie for that.
Yeah. The irony is that I haven't turned up for ages, man. I haven't been near the club until recently for the longest time, but it's a win's a win's a win.
Best supporting male. Well done, Robbie. Good stuff.
Yeah, always the bridesmaid.
Yeah, very good. Well done to all of you. I'll have to wait another year, I suppose, to get an award, but I'm not bitter about it. That's fine.
Yeah, unlucky, man.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, guys, that is pretty much it for the news. Up to anything exciting over the Christmas period, Kat? Or is it just going to be a standard COVID Christmas this year?
Yes, not doing much, really. Just trying to recover, trying to take it as easy as possible.
Have you got your taste and smell back in time for Christmas lunch?
Yes, I have. Yeah, that has been great. It's been really nice to be able to smell things again and taste things. So, yeah, that's good.
And George, just chipping away at your training for this half marathon coming up, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, more training, more the same.
Robbie, got anything exciting coming up?
No.
Where are you going to put your new trophy, Robbie?
That's a good question, actually. I think I will... I'll sweep the mantelpiece once I have it delivered to me. In front of my, obviously in front of my children, so they see kind of what a successful dad they've got, and lie completely what the award is for, and tell them that I'm the Worcester AC cross country leading male, just Pip George.
Well, on that bombshell, Charles, I know you've done it already a little bit, but did you want to introduce our interview this week with Chris Barnes, podium 5K and other race organiser?
Chris, we talked about, we've obviously introduced a little bit at the start, but Chris is somebody that is kind of prominent in the world of kind of race organisation, and particularly kind of this year, he's kind of met the adversity that's kind of been put in place by COVID kind of head on, really, and really tried to kind of push and keep kind of elite running kind of going. It turns out, he was telling me and George, that actually I completely misread his message to me when he got in touch to potentially talk to us, and he actually was talking about getting one of his athletes who ran the cross country. And I was so excited that he wanted to talk to us that I just kind of pushed him into a date and a time and whatnot. And it turns out actually he was trying to set us up with one of his athletes. So we've actually got, we've got quite an exclusive interview. So it's the first time he's ever done a podcast, even though he's had a few requests. But he's great value. And to be honest, I mean, I'm sure George will kind of concur, but he is exactly kind of represents kind of what we try and do really on the podcast. I mean, for a start, Podium, for people that don't know, is a non-for-profit organization. So he doesn't do it for any kind of monetary gain. It is purely for a love of putting on fast races for men and women that want to run fast. And that's simply why he does it. Obviously, that puts him in a position where he kind of feels comfortable, giving opinions and talking about kind of maybe sides of the racing world which kind of conflict with his, I think you've just got to have kind of full respect for him. He comes across really well. Like I said, great value, and I just really enjoyed talking to him, and hopefully kind of will keep in touch with him and talk to him again.
Well, as I said, we hope you enjoy that interview. I know we keep saying, but we've got some exciting interviews coming up in the new year. Enjoy this week's interview. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you if you've listened to us throughout this year for us to get going in this podcast. Have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we will see you in 2021. So thanks, guys. I will talk to you soon.
Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
This week on Track, myself and George are delighted to be joined by Chris Barnes. Chris heads up the non-profit race organisation Podium, most well known for their Lancashire-based 5K races that routinely attracts the fastest elite-level runners from all over the UK and further afield. Chris has developed the format to have the reputation of being innovative and widely respected in the racing community, seizing the chances this year that others have backed away from in providing quality, competitive and fast races. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Track.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Yeah, how are you tonight?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Not bad. Just busy getting ready for December, but otherwise, yeah, all good.
I thought you were going to say Christmas there, but obviously, yeah. Just the Podium December race takes precedent, doesn't it? So
the wife sorts Christmas out, yeah.
Only one place to start, really. We're recording this a week after the inaugural Podium cross country race.
So, really, just
to kind of get your thoughts on it and how the day went, and were you happy with how it panned out?
No, very, very, yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough at the beginning of this year to go to a couple of European cross countries. Unfortunately, we got invited to run for England down there. So I saw in El Jabar, I don't know if you're aware of El Jabar, they have like a course that goes around a football pitch and around a stand and back in. And, when you look at these courses the day before, you just can't see it. You just can't see how they can put a course of an elite calibre on such a small area. So I just tried replicating that, really, and changing things a little bit from what we're used to in England, where we see runners set off and then they come back 10 minutes later and then disappear again, So that was the format, really, to try and copy and change. Just, again, similar to what we did when we started the 5K, sort of 6 years ago. Just try and change things a little bit, but not too drastically.
So how did you so talk us through the process of kind of deciding the course and kind of where the course was kind of landed on in the end?
Yeah, it was kind of decided for us, to be honest with you. In the fact that obviously due to these COVID times and restrictions that we've got, I had to find a private school or private land. So we ended up, as I say, we were a small private school that had sort of three football pitches and a small sort of muddy, wet field. And so, as I say, you know, it were almost chucked upon us that we had to use that limited sort of selection of races to use. Ideally, I would have liked maybe a bit of a change of surface and maybe some woodland to go through. But as I say, we were stuck as such.
Yeah. It proved to be a challenging, muddy course from the pictures that I've seen.
Yeah. Do you know, November 7th, which was the original date, where it were a different course altogether. It were firmer. It were, you know, it were a lovely sunny day. It's just not a bit cold, but obviously the week leading into this time, which is we postponed our event till this week and just gone, and the week leading into it just rained every blinking night. So it was funny though, you know, because we had the sort of under 23 race first, the men's, and then the females, which were again both were 6K, which were it worked out at six laps, and it was funny watching the sort of younger men turn up at first and sort of say, "How far is it?" And he said, "Oh, it's just 6K." And they were sort of pulling the face as if to say, "Oh, this would be a breeze, just a bit of a blasted part, you know." And I don't think there was a single runner at finish stood on his feet. You know, they're all broke. So it worked well. It were, you know, it's what cross country is. It's supposed to be tough. It's supposed to be, you know, a bit of mud.
100%, yeah. I looked at some of the Strava times of the men's kind of elite race, and well, it's rare you see kind of 5:45 miling. You know, from the top end.
Yeah, it was frightening. I think Ross Millington ran something like 31 and a half minutes for 9K. And as I said, just entirely through mud.
Yeah.
But it was phenomenal what they did. And it was great to watch. It was a shame we couldn't have live streamed it, because the men's race, the men's elite race, were just a spectacle. Emil Crest took it out at suicide pace. And then once Ross had caught him, they just played cat and mouse for the next sort of 6K. So it was great to watch, but as I said, we couldn't really live stream it because it kind of burnt our fingers a little bit in August. So we learned from that lesson.
Okay. I was going to ask why you didn't hook up with Running Live to kind of put it on. Was it purely just because of what happened in August?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in August we obviously put Running Live on to keep people away, which I think worked to an extent. But it also cost us because you had Run Britain sort of using that to scrutinise things that we did or didn't do, so it just weren't worth the hassle, and we just thought we'd keep it low key and almost, you know, underground, so to speak, which I think unfortunately is going to be the way forward going forward for it until things settle down.
We will come on to the August race, obviously in a few minutes. I mean, it's a shame if that's the way it's going to be, because the momentum that you kind of did build up around that August race and the excitement that you were kind of generating it's unique really from what I've seen in the last few years. In terms of obviously last weekend it would have been the European Cross Country in Dublin, obviously the week before the Intercounties and the National were also cancelled around that time. Any kind of thoughts on the cancellations? What are you doing differently to the kind of big race organisers aren't managing to do?
I think money's dictating it, to be fair, Robbie. I think I've never made a penny from podium. I've never tried making a penny from podium. So whether 300 people turn up or 10 turn up, it doesn't matter. You know, it's always been about just getting a fast sort of race on. And it's same with cross country. I think it's a shame because you know, even in March time, there's just 14 hours daylight in a weekend, and I can't believe that they can't get some sort of format on to continue a national of some sort over a weekend. You know, shorter the distances, you know, limit it to maybe 4 athletes per club or something, but I'm sure there's a way to get it on. But they just don't seem interested, unfortunately.
No. I mean, you think that some of the, I mean, take the Intercounties at kind of Prestwold Hall. I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere and, you know, it's obviously kind of secluded and private. It's surprising that they can't find a way to kind of get it on. So when you say you think it's kind of money orientated, is it a fear of kind of losing money or kind of not generating money?
I think a bit of both. I think I'm sure they put a lot of expense into. I mean, you like you mentioned there, Prestwold won't be cheap to rent, but I'm sure there's other areas you could use which won't cost half as much. Do they need all them marquees to have a race like that? Maybe not. You know, so there is ways you can cut it back, and as I said, limit, you know, have smaller fields, charge more. Runners are desperate to run, you know. I mean, you look at these mass participation races where you get a medal and a t-shirt. People are paying £30 a race to run round, you know, a pretty boring course.
Yeah, so a racetrack.
I'm sure these guys who are desperate to race at any level will pay any fee if it means getting an event on and making an event safe to put on.
Yeah. I mean, from our kind of level of kind of club running as well, obviously it's the winter's been absolutely hit by all the cancellations of the kind of cross-country league fixtures. How much of that do you think is kind of down to a fear of turning it maybe into kind of just elite or top-end racing? So even, you know, even not talking about the kind of masses, but actually the masses within club running, if that makes sense.
What are you saying, that you think there's a motive to make it more elite going forward?
Well, no, a motive to kind of avoid it becoming like that. Because there was talk early on, you know, before the cross-country season, of maybe limiting it to just like, exactly like you said, a few members per club. And then that idea seemed to kind of vanish pretty quickly, but it seemed a pretty sensible idea and probably the only idea at the time. Just seemed a shame that that wasn't taken forward.
I'm pretty sure, looking at how EA are putting their guidelines out at the minute, or more rules when you read them, they're more concerned about keeping hold of the masses and not even entertaining the elite end. You know, because they've got such a broad range of runners now that are you know, paying membership fees to them. And yeah, they've got to accommodate them. But I look at Scottish Athletics at the minute, and Scottish Athletics, you know, they had two pilot races over the past month. One were a 5K, similar to podiums, and one were a cross-country course, again, on big grounds, probably went too far. But they're doing something. And every club athlete in Scotland at the minute will be looking at that and saying, at least our governing body are doing something. We're looking at our governing body down in England and saying, are they still on furlough? You know, there's just non-existent. The eye behind social media, which is probably some young kid getting paid a few quid a week to bloody answer replies and put birthdays up. It's just, I don't know. I just think it's embarrassing what's going on.
Yeah, and I think the frustrations are certainly kind of felt by, you know, I'm certainly not saying that kind of we're elite club runners, but we're certainly, you know, we certainly kind of, if races were put on and we missed a cut, then you'd hold your hands up, and they've got to kind of make that decision somewhere and try and kind of get people who need to race kind of racing, really. So
it only goes back to olden days where, you know, your clubs were allowed to take nine athletes to a national cross country, you know, and if that's not inspiring for you to be top nine at your club and train a little bit harder, and you know, I don't know what it is, I think. But again, sport's changed. 2012 probably has left a fantastic legacy as far as membership goes and as far as participation is through the roof. Has it helped as far as quality goes and as far as standard goes? Probably not.
So, kind of moving on and looking back earlier on in the year, obviously, I mean, 2020 has been an incredible year in so many ways. For you guys, I'd probably say there's been kind of two key 5K races either side of lockdown. So if we take you back to kind of the first, the March the 14th 5K, which was won by Charlotte Arter and Jake Whiteman.
That's it.
How close were you to cancelling it, and what were your thoughts around that time?
No, to be honest with you, I mean, you could see it closing in fairly quick. But there were no real restrictions put in place for any sort of race at that point. But ironically, obviously, we got our race. I'd like to say it were a shocking night. And Jake Whiteman won it in something like 14:30, I think. And then I was supposed to race the day after in Wilmslow 10K, and we got like an email at 4 o'clock in the morning saying cancelled. So, I was surprised at how quick races got cold and how quick things happened, because we were all still working and life was still semi-normal at that point. I think in March there were just obviously what we saw in the news with foreign countries and people coming back from abroad with COVID.
How much, as a kind of known race organiser, how much kind of interaction and communication have you had with England Athletics or UK Athletics? I mean, I'm a bit naive to kind of how this works, really. Have they kind of kept you in the loop and communicated with you during this time?
I think. Well, certainly where I'm concerned, I've had to sort of force that issue. And again, in their defence, if there were a few emails banding about at first before that August race, where I were desperate to get a race on. So I were trying to email the right people. And to be fair to Martin Rush and Spencer Duval, in the end, they just came back and said, look, ring us. And I rang them. And what they say on the phone is fantastic. They're very supportive. They realise their hands are tied. But they were trying to find ways to get things going. Because at that point, you see, in August, we had things coming back on BMCs and such, and track races where they were doing, 1500s in lanes and, limited sort of numbers on track events. And so we were just desperate to get things going. So in England Athletics defence, yeah, they were good. And again, UKA, I suppose what we can associate, Run Britain. At that point, they were putting webinars on and explaining how things had moved forward. And again, they were very supportive, sort of saying, look, from the 1st of August, we'll issue licences. Now, normally a licence takes 30 days. They issued us a licence in 8 days. So, they were supportive at first, but I think a lot of us were caught unawares to how bad things were going to get as far as rules and restrictions with races. And as it is still now, they're still making it difficult.
So in terms of kind of leading on to the August race and post-lockdown, to maybe talk us through a bit of that kind of organisation in the weeks prior to that, in terms of kind of adapting the race to obviously the COVID restrictions and, whether it's kind of logistics or attitude.
Well, I'm fortunate to appear that, the council are very, very supportive, and the cycle track that we have, I'd been in sort of cahoots with them for probably 3 or 4 weeks before that August fixture, just trying to book the track. And then as soon as we were able to book it, they booked it for us. They limited it to 30, which obviously we now know that's come from Sport England, that you're only a maximum of 30 in a wave as such. So I just went along with that, that we'd have races of 30, and it didn't matter if we had one race of 30 or 10 races of 30, and we'd always grade it because we've always graded our races. So again, it didn't really change much. I think in 6 years of doing podium, I think the biggest field's been 86. So it didn't really alter too much for us, to be honest with you.
Okay. And in terms of the kind of build up to the race, particularly the couple of weeks when you were kind of dropping names and we were getting a sense of how kind of fast this could be. I mean, in our kind of running group and with our kind of running friends, I've never heard kind of talk about a 5K race as much as that. Did you get a sense of that kind of excitement building, not just kind of locally, but around the country?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I don't think we'll ever see that sort of race again. I think it were purely down to luck, I think. there were one or two names sort of putting themselves forward. You know, your Phil Sessmans as such, and so that it was always going to be a fairly fast race. And then Mark Scott, I'd been doing my usual thing where, you know, I sort of spam everybody with an image of someone saying they're going to turn up. I've always been genuine with that, by the way. I always think it's a mistake to put people's names down when they're not going to race. And Mark Scott was still in America, but he was coming back, and he just messaged one night and said, I'm thinking of coming back. Can I have a number? I'm going to go for British record. So as soon as I got that, I said, well, can I make that public? And he said, yeah. He said, these are my splits. And he sent me splits, which I think were something like 2:41 and whatever, 5:5, whatever. And I put them on Instagram that night, you know. And again, to be fair to Mark, and I think it's fantastic, he sort of made it very, very public what his intentions were. And then about 2 days later, Johnny Brownlee messaged and said, any chance of a number? So I gave Johnny a number, and all of a sudden, you know, and I'm not name dropping now, by the way, but all of a sudden, it started to become a bit special, and it was sold out at this point, because at that point, it were going to be a sub 15 race, I think, sub 16 race, whatever it might have been. And then I can only presume that the triathletes were all training together, swimming together one morning, because, you know, I turned my phone on at morning about God knows what, I don't know, 8:30, something like that. And I had about 3 or 4 messages from people like Alex Yee and Ben Dykstra and Grant Sheldon, and all very polite messages saying, can we go on a waiting list? And at that point, said, right, no, stuff it. We're going to put another race on here. So we rolled it out to a sub-14:30 race. And then, like I say, it just went bonkers. Tom Evans, Frank Baddick, all these people were begging for numbers. We out PBs under 14:30, but obviously they'd got pretty good substance that they could run it from lockdown virtual races and such. So yeah, it were exciting.
I suppose that's it's amazing how that can kind of happen, like kind of the domino effect, can't it? We've just kind of one name, then two names, and you know, just at the right time in the right place. And you know, obviously it kind of led to what it led to, really. So I was going to ask about Mark Scott. So Mark Scott just came straight out and stated his record breaking intentions to you from the off.
Yeah, straight out. His first message were, can I have a number? And I said, yeah. And then it were like, well, I'll check with Jerry, who's his coach in the States. And then like 2 days later, he said, yeah, I'm coming back. I'll do it. And then, as I say, he just said, this is what I want. Can I put a pacer in, which we didn't. But we were kind of crafty a little bit, you know. There were a few entries in there. We knew Alex Yee go quick. You know, we knew people like Sessman and Adam Clark would go quick. I also had a sneaky suspicion. Not a sneaky suspicion. I knew damn well what I was doing. Omar Ahmed were always going to go out at ridiculous pace. So I set it up so that all these guys were up front row, knowing that Omar might just take it out and set Mark up, you know, sort of to 3K, and then it goes from there. But to be honest with you, the talk prior to that, even though Mark were in this ridiculous shape, there were a lot of people down at Leeds were saying, you know, Alex Yee were in ridiculous sort of 13:20 from what he were doing on a track. So it was set up nicely.
We raced with Omar, sort of raced with him. Me much further back, and George a little further back, in the cross country Birmingham League. And we all knew what you do from the start. He's just kind of take it out and see what happens. So, yeah,
he's done it. Few times at Mid Cheshire, he's done that, and you've watched him, and you just watch him get reeled back about 4K, and you think, when are you going to learn? You know, but hey, yeah. he's a nice kid.
Absolutely, yeah. He's the only reason my dad would come to watch me in the cross-country races to watch Omar. So long may it continue, to be honest.
Yeah.
So after the kind of excitement of the night, and kind of obviously Mark Scott breaking the British record, as he stated he was going to, talk us through the kind of aftermath in terms of so you were threatened with your license being revoked.
We were promised.
Okay, not threatened, promised. Okay, talk us through how kind of that went down, and exactly what happened.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a spectacular night, you know. And it were about 2 or 3 days later. In fact, it was Tuesday. It was Tuesday, like midday. And I got an email off Run Britain. I won't say who, but Run Britain, saying, can you get in touch with us? You know, we've had a few complaints. So I rang Run Britain, and they said, we can no longer give you any licenses for foreseeable future. Your races are too dangerous. Your style of racing is too dangerous. So I asked what we'd done wrong. And first of all, he said, you didn't have a socially distanced start line, which we did. Unfortunately, I allowed cameras in there into track, and you can make a picture look any way you want to make a picture. And the pitch that they had evidence from were the start of that elite men's race, and it was probably about a second before after I'd said go, you know, and arms are out and elbows. Yeah. It looked far worse than what it were. You know, then he said there were too many people spectating. Well, again, there really weren't. You know, most people outside at track had run previous races. And I'd done everything we could, like you mentioned earlier, with Dave and running live. I think Dave averages about 3,000 people per race watching running live, and there were 61,000 watched it. So I couldn't do any more than you know, try to stop people from coming and watching it and whatnot. So and then his final complaint was that I was shouting case splits out and passing droplets of COVID. So it just got a bit ridiculous, to be honest with you.
So that was a genuine complaint that was put to you because you were shouting the case splits. Yeah.
Genuine complaint. So at that point, when he used the words "your style of racing is too dangerous," there was another race on that weekend in Blackpool, and there were 1,000 runners up and down Blackpool front. So I just said to the Run Britain, so you're telling me that 1,000 people running up and down Blackpool front in waves of six going off every 30 seconds is safer than 30 guys on a private track with no one, you know, close following your guidelines? And he said, yeah. He said, because the guys at your race are running eyeballs out and the guys on Blackpool front aren't. To which the unfamous tweet came of...
Yeah, so I'm sure our listeners will kind of... I mean, we discussed this a couple of times on the podcast. So, I mean, just to kind of refresh, if you don't mind reading it out there, Chris, I've managed to find a screenshot that somebody kindly had saved it before it got taken down. So you tweeted, this was on the... Was this on the Wednesday or the Thursday?
No, this would have been... I think this was a Tuesday, so...
Still Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, this was a Tuesday, pretty much as soon as I put... So, again, okay. Unfortunately, the reason podium works well is that I'm reactive. People say, can I race? And I instantly set them up a race and set them up with a number, whatever. It's again, you can... I sit on my phone for bloody God knows how many hours a day when I've got a race coming on, just reacting to messages and reacting to people asking to enter. And yeah. So, unfortunately, the downside to being reactive is that when Run Britain sort of say... your racing's dangerous and Blackpool's not, you become reactive to that as well.
So the tweet which you sent out on that Tuesday, which let's say it caused a slight bit of controversy, was no more podium 5K race licenses for the foreseeable future. In brackets, quote marks, the races you organise are too dangerous to license at the minute. And then if you want races, you'll have to pay £20 and run with the fatties on Blackpool Prom. This put you in the centre of something that you probably weren't used to, which is what's generally called a social media storm. I think it's a 21st century term for that. So what's your take on that looking back, and talk us through that kind of the aftermath of that.
Yeah, again, the choice of words probably weren't ideal, but again, the the story behind that tweet is obviously the conversation that the same weekend there was a race in Blackpool where people were running up and down at 8-9 minute miling, which is fine. There's a market for it. But because our Run Britain had the conversation and set us up and compared us to that race, that's where the tweet came from. So yeah, it weren't ideal. Did it do any harm? Maybe not. It was funny actually. I think I did that tweet about what, 4 o'clock, 4:30, and then we went training. We went training at 6:30, and I think I deleted it at this point. I took the tweet down under a bit of criticism and got rid of it. And then one of the lads at training says, "Have you been on social media?" And I said, "No, no." He said, "That tweet's all over the place." And there are about 50 comments, I think, something like that, from no death threats, but comments. And we'd finished training 75, 90 minutes later, something like that, and there were about 500 comments, you know. So it ended up where you had the guys who'd raced podium baiting the people who'd raced Blackpool, and it just got out of hand. But all in good humour.
Any regrets?
Maybe choice of wording, maybe, but the thought behind it was highlighting what Run Britain were trying to do, and that they were trying to stop an elite style racing that, as they claim, were eyeballs out, and promote races where you can run around in waves, you know, in open space, which I still think's wrong now.
We started this podcast with a similar kind of mindset, really, based on the fact that we felt that there was serious club runners, kind of upwards, people who kind of train and work, and they kind of fall into this kind of black hole of recognition within running. So potentially they're, you know, obviously the big kind of athletics championships will get coverage to a point, but then you're more likely to get kind of kudos and kind of coverage if you run or walk the London Marathon in kind of 7 hours as you are if you kind of train to run it in 2.5 hours. Do you kind of get that sense in the running community that there's kind of a lack of recognition for the ones who, you know, kind of train to run fast?
Yeah, I mean, again, when I first started Podium, I think whatever you call it, my headline on Twitter said bringing back fast races, and there was a major gap in market where top club athletes and, you know, they just weren't getting anything for them. It, the prices were going up, online entry were introduced, and what sort of made our sport years and years ago had been forgotten. You know, turn up, roll up on a night, pay £5, scribble your name on a piece of paper and flog each other around the track and then go on. And it had been forgotten. So that's all we did. And I think, unfortunately now, and certainly in the last 5 years, maybe 10 years, more and more companies are creeping into it, which is great. You know, they're making money. I'm probably jealous that they're making money from it because it's, you know. But are they doing anything for sports? Maybe not. I don't think they are. They're doing great things for health and fitness, but just nothing for the sport.
Do you think there's a chance that there'll be a bit of a comeback from races such as your own? I mean, you're seeing kind of obviously Cheshire 5K, Speedway down in kind of Bristol Way.
Yeah, I think you can see it already. I think, you know, there's been and I take it as a bit of a compliment, really, that there's all these cycle tracks now being used for 5Ks, and there's, you know, there were one at weekend on an airfield, and it's good. It's what we needed. You know, I mean, obviously there were the fast 5K, but got the BBC Sport coverage, which again, yeah, fantastic. And if we can all have a piece of that cake and all get coverage at these top end races, even better. it's needed. You know, it bridges a gap. It bridges a gap that these international athletes and what, you know, they're all brought a little bit closer by having races like Podium and like Fast 5K. And, you know, so Ipswich 5K even. So, it bridges a gap. And as I say, if we get that coverage at everyone's races, better still.
I think that was something that we touched on in the podcast as well after the Fast 5Ks. Imagine if we'd have had that kind of level of coverage at the Podium 5K with the kind of wide camera angles. And I mean, nothing against running live, because that's running live is absolutely brilliant. And obviously bringing it to us where we wouldn't get to see it normally. But exactly like you say, I mean, do you think there's potentially a kind of future in being kind of covered in that way, or is that just kind of a pipe dream?
I think maybe Fast 5K were lucky that they've got
Steve Crown,
the right people sat behind setting it up, you know, which is great. And again, maybe we're a little bit envious, and it'd be great to have that at races that we organise. You know, can is it affordable to do that sort of coverage at what we'll call ourselves domestic racing? Maybe not.
You need to take Steve Cram out for a pint, Chris. That's what we need to do.
But he's been down there enough, you know. He's been down watching enough.
Really, yeah. Yeah, there's some great pictures of him when he was obviously with Laura Waitman down there, wasn't there? So.
And again, he's supported it. You know, he sent Laura down. He sent Tom Lanks down a couple of times. So yeah, he supports it, and he's good for the sport. And again, you know, it's good what he's. It might be that what Steve was set up in Wigan there with Fast 5K might just be the launch pad for two or three more to do something similar. And as I say, bridge that gap and take that elite end forward.
I know we've slightly kind of diverted from the tweet and taking it back to kind of what the point of it was, but just to kind of go back, because when you actually kind of Google that tweet or look at it, the amount of people that have retweeted it, and then obviously you've got kind of, you know, multitude of comments underneath each retweet. I've never really spoken to anybody who's been in a social media storm before, Chris. So did you read all the tweets and the comments, and how did you feel kind of going through it?
No, I didn't, to be honest with you. I'd read the odd one, but it's social media. It's what happens these days. We're being blasé about it. It were water for ducks back. It were a slip of the tongue, and that's all it were. And it were exactly the same way we dealt with it. I didn't really read much about it, and I had more people tell me about it than I did read about it.
Tell us a little bit about Podium as an organisation. I know that like you said, you don't make a profit, so you're like a not-for-profit organisation.
We made a major loss at first. I mean, it probably cost about, I don't know, 350 quid to get going, to have it measured and licensed and whatnot for the first race. And then the first race, it had 18 runners in it, and it was won by a guy called Chris Livesey in 15.02, which I thought were unbelievable for our local area to have someone who could run 15.02. And then I quickly put another race, another one on straight away, just from demand. I mean, what we were doing at first, if coaches and athletes were saying, can you put a race on, you know, this is a good day, we just did it. And so the next race, again, it probably doubled. We had about 30-odd, 40 runners in. I think five went sub-15, and all of a sudden, I was thinking, our bloody, you know, the next Brendan Foster putting races on. You know, not realising what it could go to. And I was doing a bit of geeking earlier just to see where we'd gone. And I think that second race, a girl called Rachel Bamford turned up. I don't remember Rachel Bamford, not from Leeds, international steeplechaser. And she ran something like 16:16, which again were mind-blowing for a girl at that sort of time. And I don't think we realise that in the last 5 years where endurance running's gone, certainly in the last 12, 18 months, you know. And it just went from strength to strength. It seemed that every March, even though we had fixed on all, you know, three or four a year, every March it went bonkers. You know, I think every time there were a record broke, it were in a March fixture. So, you know, Tom Lancashire took it down to, I think, 14:21. And then Ben Connor turned up and solo ran a 13:52, which blew our minds. And then also the next fixture after that were the August fixture, which were just on a completely different level again.
Yeah. So I get the impression it's not a one-man band, Chris, podium. There must be more people kind of working for you or with you.
No, it's one crazy guy on his phone in his kitchen with a bottle of beer, and hence the but yeah, it's always just been me on my own. I've got one or two guys who loyally turn up and timekeep and, you know, every race. But yeah, no, it's just me that does it.
How's that had a? And I don't know anything about you as you, and I don't want to get too personal with your kind of personal life or your work life or any of that. But I mean, how do you kind of combine it? Do you find it just kind of runs into it smoothly, and are there any times where you feel it kind of drains on your time so much you wonder what you're doing?
No, to be honest with you, it's, and I'm not sounding like cocky or anything, but it's so easy to organise. As I say, I just put a fixture out, get a license, book the track, and then just go a bit silly on Instagram and Twitter, and before you know it, it looks like some big corporate organisation's got a race on in west of England, and that's the truth of it. And it honestly wouldn't have worked. The only reason it works is that from the very first fixture, it caught the imagination, and a few fast lads turned up, and then as it went on, in my opinion, the women put it on the map. You know, I think McColgan were the first one to go sub 16 on there. She turned up, and then Rosie Clark turned up with Melissa Courtney. Then Laura Waitman turned up, and so the women's calibre actually put it on the map up until that August fixture.
So, I mean, you mentioned some of the names there. Talk us through the kind of process in kind of pursuing and attracting some of the athletes that you've had, which are complete, you know, undoubtedly top end elite kind of UK runners. Is it? I mean, I hope I'm not kind of too bold to ask, but is it kind of money involved? Is it more logistics? I mean, how does that kind of work?
Yeah, they pay a fiver and write the name down on a piece of paper and go on the start line. That's true as well. You know, it's like that August fixture. There weren't a single athlete that didn't pay. You know, because they all did their online entry and put the details down, so it covered them for, you know, this new wave of COVID rules, whatever you want to call it. So it's always been like that. I mean, when I first started, anyone who could run sub 16 got a free entry. And then them sub 16 lads were saying, you know, start charging us and put a bit of prize money up. And again, early doors, anyone, I'd stand on a start line and sort of say, right, it's £20 to win. It's £50 for a sub 16. And it's half of money in my pocket for a record. And we did that every fixture, to where, you know, sometimes people got a good payday. Invariably, records were falling every time we had a race, and sometimes you only went away with £100. So it's always been that way. They've always paid, and they've always got the what's left from the sort of payments of the race.
I think that, it speaks volumes about not only the race, but also kind of what fast runners want to do in terms of kind of coming to a race. If they're willing to, well, I know it's only a nominal fee, but you know, they're not waiting to be kind of paid or, you know, kind of put up or have travel expenses or whatever it may be, if they want a race.
I think in all the years of doing it, I think I've had two messages asking if we put athletes up in hotels, and again, you know, we've only ever paid first man, first lady. You know, I've never paid down to sort of, you know, whatever, third, fourth, fifth. If I could get a sponsor behind it, then yeah, we could probably change things and make it a bit different. But would it change things? It's like you could offer the race to these organisations, your UKAs and your EAs, but would it change it? Would it make it? Is it the rawness that works? You know, these guys just enjoy turning up, absolutely thrashing each other and doing the cool down and going home. We are waiting around for prizes and waiting around to see results. I think it's just, they just want to murder each other on a track.
Proper old school racing. I know that you're kind of mixed in the circles with obviously, you know, the elite runners, and you've kind of championed Mark Scott, particularly this year, for his kind of lack of attention and recognition, maybe. Have you got any opinions on the kind of the funding model for elite runners? And I remember reading Mark Scott a couple of years ago touting for kind of funding while he was kind of in America and I think hitting a brick wall with it. How do you see that?
I think the funding side of it, I think British Athletics miss a major trick, you know. I think if they were to stop funding for athletes and put all that money in a prize pot and get them athletes on a start line and make them earn it, and, you know, pay big money, pay them £5,000 to win a race, pay them £3,000 for second, £1,000 third. Make it a spectacle. Again, going back to BBC Sport, get BBC Sport covering it. Get even more money into the pot, you know, and then that way it's a fairer level playing field where athletes like Mark, who probably deserve funding at the minute, are getting funding rather than getting funding because has he got the right coach? Is he speaking to the right people? No, he's doing it because he's getting results.
The funding debate just seems to generate so much kind of animosity, really, and divisions, doesn't it? For every runner or athlete that obviously gets funding, it feels like kind of three are hard done by for, you know, not getting funding. I suppose going back to kind of something I said earlier, I mean, do you see that as a realistic kind of future for the sport, or again, is it just beyond kind of comprehension that could happen?
I wonder if the people running the sport are losing touch with the sport. You know, I wonder how many people that are running our sport have stood there and got cold hands doing timekeeping and writing numbers down on a piece of paper in pouring rain. And, you know, so maybe they're losing touch with it. Maybe they could bridge the gap by getting maybe some of the hardened club people, in, you know, helping them. Again, going back to Scottish Athletics, they just seem to be doing it right at the minute. They've got a lot of people volunteering to help. They've got the right people in charge there. Maybe we need to look at Scottish Athletics and copy their model.
Yeah. In terms of what's coming up for you guys, you've got a couple of obviously you've got the Christmas 5K, which is on the 27th of December.
That's it.
And then you've also got something that you're kind of seems to be kind of bubbling under the on the social media kind of podium platforms, which is the possibility of an inter-country cross country in March and April. Sorry, February, March, maybe.
Yeah, we've got the 5K in December. Again, that seems to be taking off. It's looking like we'll have a sub 15 race now added to that list. And then, yeah, the cross country went so well, and I'd had conversations with Mark Monroe at Scottish Athletics and James Williams at Welsh Athletics, who were both keen to try and get, you know, some sort of home nations going. So we'll see what happens with that. If that can take off, then that'd be fantastic.
Any thoughts on the, would it be the same venue or looking for somewhere more neutral, or essentially you put as neutral as you can get, really, aren't you?
I think definitely a different venue. As I say, maybe something with a range of surfaces to copy them European style cross countries. And hopefully going back to what I was saying about sponsors, hopefully try and get a sponsor involved, because you look at people like Saucony, who's lost a national and lost a Mansfield races, you know, they've got a pot of cash there they can probably spend. Yeah. I'm sure they'd be overjoyed to get involved and give athletes money.
There's a genuinely realistic proposition that your one-man podium band could put on the two biggest cross-country races on the British Isles over the winter season of 2020-2021. Has that kind of thought dawned on you yet?
I think we've put the best cross-country this year on so far, haven't we?
Well, undoubtedly, yeah. I know George is itching to pick your brains on a couple of things, Chris. So if it's okay, I'm going to pull him in and he's going to ask you a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem. How are you doing, George?
Just a couple of thoughts, or a couple of the big issues in athletics at the moment. Shoes, all the headlines in the press are, yeah, technology's making people too fat.
As far as the shoe debate goes, it's evolution.
Yeah, I agree with that. I find it weird how people seem to think that because of the shoes, you can't compare this generation's time to previous generations' times. I just think that, yeah, it's natural, like, technology is going to get better. All the athletes in the same race have the same technology available to them, which they didn't when it was only Nike athletes. I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, but again, this debate on Twitter recently, it seems to be something that's really got all the Tim Hutchins. But they are available to every athlete, whether you're sponsored or not. You, they're still available to you. They don't work for everybody. I've got a pair of Ockers. Carbons. I'm unfit, so they don't work on me. So, it's proof that you've got to train to run these fast times in these trainers. It's not just some sort of miraculous magic wand that you shake over your feet. Tim Hutchins here, I'm sure that there's people like in, maybe Ron Hill and further back saying, oh, look at Tim, he's got extra cushion in his shoe and a lighter vest. It's just how times work. You've just got to carry on with it, I think, and maybe come off Twitter.
We're not going to let you get away without us answering a couple of our quick fire questions, if that's all right, Chris. I know we've talked about some serious issues, so we'll bring it home with a couple of kind of lighter questions, maybe, just to kind of pick your opinions on things.
Risky.
Yeah, favourite tweet of all time. Apart from any podium race, what's your favourite race of all time?
Well, to run it, or to actually watch?
To run it, to watch it, whatever it might be. It can be a specific year or specific race.
Well, again, going, the reason podium were created was, you look at the old town centre races, and one of the classics on YouTube is one that we call Newcastle 5K Town Centre. It lasted about 3 years, and for years and years, even up to this year, I think there were about 12 of the top 20 fastest 5K times came from that race. So that's great to watch. I used to love Edinburgh cross country. I still do. I think it's a major loss to running, I think. So maybe Edinburgh cross country from my era.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. I must have watched all the old ones on YouTube kind of more than once. It's to see those kind of guys on that course was, absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? So especially seeing kind of Mo Farah getting a bit of a stuffing on there, it makes everyone realise kind of how hard kind of cross country running is, I think, for the layman. So
I think the range that they used to have up there, they had the relay, they had the 4K, they had the longer races. It was just superb. And I love the concept of the USA versus you versus Great Britain. Again, I just think it's a big loss up there.
So if you could go for a long run with one athlete, any athlete, dead or alive, who would it be?
Wow.
It's got to be a long run. So you've got to spend 2 hours with them.
Do you know what? Probably Eddie Izzard, right? Strange athlete choice, but I just think the guy's interesting. I think he's a little bit quirky. Well, not a little bit quirky, he's a lot quirky, but... Yeah, and I think so. Someone like that, someone with a bit of humour behind him. There's too many boring people in sport these days.
And he runs as well, doesn't he? Eddie Izzard.
He could probably go in a local race to me.
We'll leave it there. And then, obviously, you've seen some great racing over the last 6 years. But what's the best racing performance that you've seen at a podium race? So obviously the Mark Scott, that kind of in terms of context and the actual performance.
Well, obviously Mark Scott's is head and shoulders above anyone that's been down there. But when Laura Waitman brought that record, it remixed race, and I think Nick McCormick had just come back to running, and he'd just moved local to us, and you know it was still pretty smooth. But Laura was just so smooth that day, and I reckon she could have done another 5K at the same pace. So that were a pretty impressive performance. As I say, I think the likes of Laura probably put podium on the map.
Brilliant. Nice shout out for Laura Waitman as well, who's one of our favourites on track. So yeah. Look, I mean, thank you so much for giving up your time on a Friday night. I'm sure you've got many other things that you could be doing, Chris.
I've got a 5K to organise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just want to say a massive thank you. I mean, the podium 5K in August won our podcast race of the year this year. So you know, we kind of love what you do, and probably after talking to you tonight, kind of love you even more really for what you do. So you know, huge respect. So thank you very much.
Just get that edit button going.
It's broken, mate. Sorry.
No, thanks for inviting me, and yeah, as I say, hopefully. Hopefully I've not said too much wrong.
Thank you, Chris.
No problem.